Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so excited to introduce you to Michael Culhane. Who is he? A firefighter in St. Anthony Fire Department. So let me tell you a little bit about why I am excited to have him tonight. You see, if you regularly read the Star Tribune, you may have come across a story of perseverance this week. A St. Anthony City employee turned the bleak prospects of a battle with COVID into his dream of becoming a firefighter. He wanted to bring his story to you, so we reached out to new St. Anthony Fire Department member Michael Culhane, and he graciously is joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Geraldine, and you?
I'm doing well. Just to think that I can ask that question, how are you doing? There was a time when you were not doing well at all. And just this past Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, the swearing in as a St. Anthony firefighter was mere ceremony for you. And I'm just so shocked by what you've been through. So let's get right into this. Here you are as a firefighter. You wanted to be a firefighter since what age?
I don't know exactly what age I wanted to, but when the pandemic first hit, I'm a little bit of an oddity as far as those going into the fire service, where I just turned 49 years old. And if you're reading some of Jeremy Olson's articles in the Star Tribune,
yes,
most of the rookie class coming in are, you know, half my age. So I wanted to get back to the community, St. Anthony Village. I grew up here. I'm back in the city. I wanted to get back. I think it was more or less, you know, I've always been interested in it, and just gave me the opportunity. I had the time to give back to the community, and it was something that I've always been interested in. Of course, who's not interested in the big red trucks and the lights and all the excitement that goes with it, but also just kind of a calling to help others.
Mm. A calling to help others is something that we hear a lot, whether it's from the police officers or doctors, you name it. But in this particular vocation, it is not an easy thing. We have seen the falling off of firefighters years ago, even after 9/11. And I'm just curious to know, do you know that you have the support, you have all of the help that you will need in this vocation, this new vocation of yours? And if so, how does your family feel about it? I believe you have 4 children. Am I correct with that?
I do. The support from the department itself, is tremendous. I've got great support there. I've got this, you know, I should say even before them is my, going back to you, you had mentioned my family. So my immediate family, my parents, my partner, Aaron, my four kids, have been, some, you know, sometimes I think they roll their eyes when I decide to do different ventures at certain times, but I know I make them proud by doing it. I know that they know I'm going to put my best foot forward. I have nothing but great support, and the community here supports it too. And it's, you know, it is one of those items within the city here that, you know, people look up to, and it has been tough for certain first responders, and it will continue to be tough. But I think, you know, I'm in a spot where I'm lucky to have tremendous support.
Yeah. You know, you had the drive and the perseverance. It mentions that in the article. So a lot of people are really looking forward to meeting you or seeing you. Are you getting invitations to other parts of the Twin Cities and beyond? Are people calling saying, hey, we want you to come and speak about what you've been through and how you became a firefighter?
I haven't had many speaking engagements yet. Obviously, the staff at Hennepin County Medical Center, they kind of prompted my first original article that, again, Jeremy Olson did with the Star Tribune, and then his follow-up when I got to the point of being sworn in. I put it out there. They know that I will do anything that I can to support them, and am a big flag waver for them and for, you know, anything that I can do, again, to give back to them and to promote them. But yes, I would love to get in front of people and tell my story. I enjoy it. It's an amazing story. The hard part about my story is, for the majority of it, I was unconscious in a coma. So it gets to the point 3 months down the road where then I had the recovery. And that's what I remember the most of it. And that's kind of where my story begins.
Yeah,
we always kind of joke that it's probably a two-sided story. The story of my family and the story of me, where they're the ones that had to do the day in and day out for many, many days, wondering if he's going to make it. Oh, my gosh, what's happening? And here I am waking up from this going, I can't move, and I have to start all over again. And I have this goal in mind, and that's where I want to get to.
So in order to get there, how much time do you give yourself? Do you give yourself more time? Are all of the firefighters supporting you as well as those in the higher ranks? And if so, if they are all supporting you, do you say to your family, don't worry, I'm fine? We hear numbers about COVID going up. We hear so much. I can just only imagine your partner saying, no, you need to rest or you need to slow down. But at this time in your life, you know, we don't always have time. So use it as much as you can.
Correct. And I take that stance, Jalen. You know, I do get that from my partner or from my mother, you know, why are you doing so much and why do you rest? And I remember one time in particular, I said to my mother when she wanted me to be more restful. And I said, I understand what you're saying, but I also have to look at this and go, Mom, I'm at the point I'm at in my recovery because I have refused to just continue to rest. And she looked at me and I could tell in the look in her eyes that she understood at that point to do it. But yes, I mean, the department from day one has been there, you know, even in my, you know, working out and my recovery there, I've had nothing but support and my colleagues working out with me and doing everything they can to help me get to that end goal.
Yeah. So when are you writing the book?
People ask that all the time. I have started, you know, I've talked to psychologist and she gave me the good advice of journaling. And because of some of this stuff is as I move from the event itself, some of it isn't going to be as front and center anymore. And I find myself going through different stages of it where, so what she was saying is to write these down because you might not remember it. So I do have some jottings and some things that I've written down. And obviously it's a pretty big event, so I don't think it's gonna leave my memory bank soon. But I have thought that, and many have said that, and many have said go out and tell your story too, like you had mentioned beforehand, getting out and speaking in front of others in that.
Right. I want to step back just a little bit because you also mentioned in the article that you still have some nerve pain in your toes and a little less lung capacity. And, of course, being a firefighter, do you have concerns about that?
But not so much the feet, because it's not, you know, like when talking to my primary, it's a little bit of neuropathy in my feet. It's not debilitating. Obviously, it doesn't keep me down. It's more of an annoyance. The lung thing is more, and that was more of a question mark when talking to Jeremy was, I think I have that question in my mind, you know, where am I? Because I was told from pulmonologists that I was going to get about a year for them to recover. Just naturally, your body's going to do that. And that's then what, once it's done that year of regrowth, that's what you're going to get. So it's more of a question mark where I say, where am I at in there? But it can be a concern and you think about it. And even when I came back and, like I said, having colleagues, I mean, they were concerned, you know, how is he going to react even going on air, putting a mask on and going on compressed air? You know, is that going to bring back, you know, from being on the ventilator? Is that going to be something where he says, absolutely no way. This just doesn't feel right. I don't like it. But so far, so good. It's just more the lung capacity. It's just kind of my own question as to where am I in it?
Yeah. I keep saying to myself, when you hear these type of stories, these are stories that inspire others, right? Literally, what you are doing right now, talking here on a 50,000-watt radio station. And I'm just curious to know, knowing that this is the story that is going to linger, it is going to keep coming forward because more people are going to want to know, how did he do that? How did he heal? How did he? So as you are writing the book, I can only imagine, you know, it could be a big book. It could be a smaller book, but write the book. I hope you don't get discouraged. I started a book when I lived in Los Angeles for a year, and I was so inspired by my son because he was coming there to go to college. And he said, Mom, will you come with me? And I stayed for a year, and it changed my life. I wrote 72 pages of a book, and no one has seen it or read it. Okay, it's just really ridiculous. I hope you don't do that, Michael. Please don't do that, sir. Okay, so then now that you know where you are, what is going to happen? Have you started already as a firefighter? Do I have that correct?
Yeah, so to clarify also, I am an on-call firefighter for the city of St. Anthony Village. So I'm not a full-time firefighter.
Okay.
So I am in an on-call capacity with them. But yes, I have started. I have started back working, filling shifts on what we call our duty crew. We do a lot of medical calls within our city here. And I'm sure if you polled a lot of firefighters, those medical calls probably outweigh the fire calls quite a bit. So, you know, they tied that back in. I think that was one of the things they really wanted to tie back in is here I am in the care that I got at what I, you know, this world-class facility right here in our downtown metro.
Right.
And now there's times where I'm giving patient care and just right before swearing in, I'm in an ambulance heading down to county with a patient that needed some extra special attention that we had to get, you know, down to the emergency room. So it's kind of circling back with that. But, yeah, I'm back in there doing it and really enjoying it. And, you know, sometimes you have those questions of why was I spared and why was I given the opportunity? And I think it's those little things there where I can help people now and give back.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that the truth? And that builds all of us up, right? It just builds us up when we hear these type of stories. I do want to say to you or ask you about your journey with the fire department. This is from the article as well. And you had to do this elaborate fitness test. Can you tell us about it?
So every year that we do a physical agility test within the department. So my career path to becoming a firefighter and an EMT obviously got cut, you know, short, or I had to put a pause on it about halfway through my training. So finishing up my EMT and taking my national testing for that, and I had finished my fire aspect of it, but then just also making sure that I was in the physical capacity to go back into the department. And I knew in July that we had it coming up, and I know what it consists of because I had done it before. But it was kind of, that was kind of going to be the tell-all test. Now, I had taken other workability tests and back-to-work tests that the city mandated, of course, before I came back, and they wanted to make sure I was good to go, and I did those tests. But I really knew this was going to be, you know, putting on all the gear, going on air, dragging dummies, doing, you know, different practicals that we do, taking ladders off engines and setting ladders on a building, using certain pipe poles, and then using your fine motor skills, and then pulling charged hose lines and everything. And I knew that I called it my Mount Everest. I knew at that point, if I conquered that I could, I really felt like I had made it. And I had already gotten my new, behind the scenes, my new helmet, going from my rookie helmet to my full-fledged helmet. But I really didn't touch it. I just stared at it in my locker for about a month. When I just to put that period at the end, I wanted to make sure that I was able to do that. And again, with much help and support, I was able to do that. And it was a big relief. And I felt like I had made it.
It is done. And I hope that you will inspire other young people or people your age, young men or women, to be firefighters. And I can just imagine how difficult it is for all the families that have a firefighter in them, in their family, because it's not easy to deal with that. Some of the things that you have to do are overwhelming. Not just overwhelming for you, but for the team, for the people that are in trouble. There's a fire, the communities. There's a lot to this. So I'm so grateful that you are doing this, that you are going up and forward and making it happen, not just for you, but for all of those in the community and that is with the team of firefighters. I really hope that you will be safe, that you will accomplish your dream, because you're right there. You're right there. I hope I can hear from you 10 years from now. And you say, hey, Gerlin, I'm still doing this. You want to hear it? And I'm going to go, yeah, I want to hear it.
We'll be swapping books at that point. You can read mine and I'll read yours finally.
Oh, God, I hope you're right about that. I really hope you are right about that. Michael, is there anything else you want us to know about who you are today, why you did what you did? Am I missing any important things we should have talked about? You have this moment right now to add it.
I just think you talked about perseverance, and I remember my father talking about that, and him talking about the medical staff, saying, you know, Michael just pushed on. When we gave therapies, he worked through it. He pushed through it, and that's what we loved. If I go back and I look at my occupational therapist and physical therapist, the same thing. They pushed me and I pushed myself, and it's some people I feel a little guilty because I have been able to recover well, and I don't want people to think that it's just been easy. It's been hard, but there's times where you don't want to do it, but you have to get that mindset. And I know people have heard it before, but you have to push through and you have to look at that goal. And I had setbacks. I got frustrated with certain things. I had my setbacks, and I would lose focus at times. It was still there in the distance, but it wasn't front and center. And you have to, like you said, even with that book, you found something there in that year out in LA, and it was a memorable time for you. You were able to put 72 pages together, and you know it's still sitting there.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're going to get back to it and you're going to finish it. And I keep, you know, like my staff has said to just keep moving. And that's what I've continued to do with my life. I continue to move and I work and I do many things and have my hands in many jars, but it keeps me moving. It keeps me interacting with people. And when people go, you must have this new zest for life. I've always had a zest for life, but I think it's even more so now, getting to know people, being able to tell a story, listen to their story, knowing that at some point something I've done maybe has helped them conquer something and go, you know what, he was able to do it. And I see that in comments on the articles and stuff. And that's what it's about. It's about that person that goes, I'm going to push a little bit harder today. I'm going to try a little bit more and I can get there. And I had to do that same thing too, and we can all do that. So that's my message is, yeah, have a support team, get out and enjoy life, meet new people, do new things, keep learning every day. Because like you said, we just don't know when that day is going to come to an end. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's many, many years down the road for all of us. But it is kind of cliche, but it's like enjoy each day and learn something new. There's that old saying, I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt, do something that scares you every day.
Every day.
And that was part of it. Every day do something. I was scared when I had to first start doing my physical therapy, but I conquered it and I got there, and that's what got me to where I'm at today.
That's right. You reached the pinnacle, sir. You really have. With the grace of God, all the work that you did, it is quite remarkable. You are a remarkable man. I hope that you will get on the speaker's circuit and start talking, especially to the college students that may look at you and say, you're my hero. You just never know. Encourage you to really, if you can start speaking and letting people hear your story, I hope so. I hope I'll run into someone who says, yep, I heard that story too. So thank you for joining us tonight, Michael Colhane.
My pleasure.
You take care of yourself.
You too, Geraldine. Thank you.
Have a great
evening.
Thank you.
Good night.
Wow, that is remarkable, Jonathan. What a story. What a story. Michael Colhane went through hell and back. You hear people, you remember how old folks used to say that many years ago? Oh, that person went through hell and he about to go, right? About to go through hell. But they come back from hell. And you never know what they have been praying about or wondering about or smiling about or feeling good about when others are crying and weeping because they don't know what is happening or if the body is not going to sustain itself. You don't know. But the bottom line is this man was confident. He's confident that whatever it is that he has to go through, keep going, because this is what he is made for. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now 8:33 here at WCCO. Welcome back. I am excited to introduce you to Carolyn Robinson. Who is she? Marketing and public relations specialist at the Science Museum in Minnesota. You guys have no idea how addicted I was to the Science Museum of Minnesota. And it lasted a few years. I don't know what it was. I would love to go. I had a membership at one time and I can't remember how long ago that was. I would take my children with me. We had a blast. And now I want to take my grandchildren. Now they're old enough to go. And this is a big deal to talk about the Science Museum tonight. So welcome, Carolyn Robinson. Wednesday is National STEM and STEAM Day. The Twin Cities is full of organizations that lead the effort to teach our children about science, technology, engineering, and art, and math. Now, one that usually comes top of mind is the Science Museum of Minnesota, of course, and to give us a look at some of the programs the museum is offering through the winter semester, we've asked marketing and public relations specialist, as I named her just a moment ago, Carolyn Robinson, and she joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello. What a great introduction.
Well, I tell you, I'm excited about it. I have always loved the Science Museum, and I've even worked and to do a few things with the Science Museum through the years. And so I'm so excited to have you guys back on. I used to talk to you guys a long time ago. I've been here at WCCO for, what, 27 years now? So it's like I should have been talking to you guys almost every year because of what you do. Now, some people, when they hear there's a STEM that Wednesday is National STEM or STEAM Day. First of all, tell us what a STEAM Day is.
Well, you know, I like to think that every day is a STEM or a STEAM Day at the Science Museum, and that acronym stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math, and then the STEAM is adding arts to it, which I think is important because, you know, I've interviewed in my role quite a few scientists, and they always bring up the arts and humanities, and there really isn't a, just, they're all interconnected, and I always think that that's exciting to hear about. So that's what those acronyms are, but we feel like it's STEM and STEAM Day every day.
Well, I'm so glad that you made that very clear to me and to our listeners tonight, because it's important to know this. And you are absolutely right. To have these two together, it can only make it even better for the students that come into the Science Museum, for the parents that come into the Science Museum and try to get some understanding. How are you setting this all up for families to come back into the Science Museum? I mean, they're there all the time unless you guys are not open. And I worry sometimes that the children really don't get what it's all about. But then I learn that they are, especially from the STEM program. So tell us more about what STEM and STEAM are doing together.
Yeah, so, you know, like you are alluding to, STEM is so important. It's what's going to power our future, and we need people to have science literacy, and it improves everyone's lives when more people are able to understand science and participate in science, and that's why access is so important at the museum. People learn in different ways. You know, not everyone picks up on things in, you know, reading it from a book or kind of that more traditional school environment, which we also support, and we love our teachers and have resources for them as well. But there are some people, I would say myself included, who learn better when they can do it hands-on. And so it's very experiential at the museum, and that's one way that we try to make it more accessible for people. When you can really interact with a concept in STEM, sometimes it helps that click. And to your point about families and students, it's really learners of all ages. You know, if you're an adult and it was something that didn't really resonate you when you were in school, maybe now experiencing it, something does click for you. And for our younger learners, we hope that, you know, it sparks a lifelong love of science.
Right.
And that's impactful in that way.
I have a granddaughter that is in STEM, and she is really enjoying it. It has changed everything for her. And I find that quite remarkable. And, you know, you don't hear about STEM as much on the radio, on television. I mean, two or three years ago, there was so much talk about STEM. STEAM wasn't a part of it. So what brought STEAM on, and who was the person responsible for it?
Well, I think it's in terms of who's responsible, I think that that's been a movement with teachers and the STEM professionals saying, you know, like I said earlier, that the arts aren't excluded from STEM topics, that they are topics that work together and are made so much better when they're all together. And that just kind of broadening it, I think, is so important. Again, going back to the access of it all, you know, the more things are under this umbrella of what is science, the more people feel like they can participate, and the more people feel like, oh, this is something that is accessible to me and something that I actually can participate in. Mm-hmm. And it really affects who sees themselves as a scientist.
How do you see AI fitting in with STEM and STEAM?
That's a great question. I think technically that would fall under the T of technology.
Right.
And one thing that is happening at the museum right now over the winter is we do have some teams of robotics teams from different schools, and they are doing what it sounds like. They're working on robotics, and we're hosting them at the museum on Saturdays through the end of the year. And I think that's really the closest intersection that we have with AI at the moment. We don't have any exhibits about it yet. But, of course, that's something that will probably change in the future.
Yeah, the one thing I would ask of my granddaughter, I would say to her, honey, have you seen a big change with STEM? Have you noticed that there's so much more that you have to do to really be an expert at it? You know, I wonder how long it takes a student, maybe in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade, how long does it take them to master STEM?
Yeah, and it is something, what's so interesting about it is that it's a constantly evolving topic, and, you know, it's something that is so important. When you learn to think through things in that sort of STEM or STEAM way, that critical thinking piece, and it's also, you know, you're not married to the result of something. Science is always changing, and the more that we are exploring and doing experiments and researching things, sometimes the way that we thought things were can change, and we take that new information and we come to a new conclusion. And I think that that's really valuable in anyone's life, is having that idea of, oh, I can change my mind. I can learn new information, and it can impact how I see things.
So just from hearing you talk about this, it sounds like this is what you love. This is a big piece of what you love, doing what you love, seeing and hearing and reading about and staying on top of it. And that is such a blessing. Now, I'm reading here some of the notes that you have. It says the U.S. has fallen behind other nations in science and math education, and that we have a need to motivate young kids to pursue these subjects to keep up with the rest of the world. This has been a threat, really, in my humble opinion, when it comes to the world looking at the United States, that they don't see us growing in the science, the technology, the engineering, the art, and the math. They don't see us growing. How do you look at that? How do you see that?
Yeah, I think that really goes back to access a lot of the time. You know, you were saying that there's been in previous years an emphasis on STEAM or STEM, or, you know, getting girls involved in STEM, or getting, you know, different groups that haven't always felt welcome in STEM. You know, you think about, what does a scientist look like? What does that mean to different people? Do you think of, you know, the movie Back to the Future, and it's Christopher Lloyd, it's an older white guy in a lab coat, like, that is that what a scientist is? And
right.
It's not. And so it really goes to, we have to change how we look at who is science for. And the answer, the truth is that it's for everyone, and that it's something that everyone has the ability to access in some way and to contribute to in some way. And it's really broadening that access in terms of, you know, who is able to get resources and who is able to experience these learning opportunities. And it's expanding that access, and it's expanding, you know, our collective vision of what does a scientist look like.
Right, exactly. Well said. So when it comes to children or teenagers or even adults coming into the Science Museum and all of that is happening when it comes to STEM and STEAM, how do you encourage, or how do you get young girls to really say, or teenagers even, I can do this, I can do this? And that's what scares me. Like you mentioned before, we have a real challenge with building the interest in girls. It is critical that they, too, are on board with this, and that we continue it, right, all the way into, you know, whether we're 70 years old or older. Hopefully we'll stay on top of it. Do you feel at the Science Museum, as you embark upon some of these students that are very interested in it, they may start asking you questions, do you feel like, oh, we're going to be just fine here in the Twin Cities and in this great state of Minnesota? These students are on top of it? Or do you feel like we have a whole lot more to do?
I mean, I think the answer is yes. I think it's both. I think that our STEM education staff, they see, educators, whether that's in a traditional classroom or in other ways, they see educators who are passionate about what they do and about working with students. And they also see students who are interested in these topics. And they also see students who are learning that they're interested in this topic. You know, it sometimes is something, like I was saying before, you don't think it's for you. And when that changes, that is such a catalyst for change in every other area. And so I think that, you know, the job's probably never done in encouraging people to engage with science. But I think that we do have that interest, and young people especially, they're growing up in a very different world than, you know, anyone else has grown up. It's a very singular time with regard to science and technology, and it'll be interesting to see how growing up so steeped in technology, how that impacts kind of the scientists of tomorrow.
And you love it. That's amazing to me. Look, you know, my name is Geraldine, by the way. You're Carolyn. So yours is spelled with a K and mine is spelled with a J at the front. So that's really nice. I just wanted to mention, too, that people know that this is a national STEAM Day. And some of the history tells us that in 2015, MGA Entertainment founded National STEAM Day to inspire students in the world of science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. Now, the registrar at National Day Calendar, tell us about that, because I don't know about National Day Calendar.
Oh, well, you know, I always think it's interesting. There's always a day for something, you know, and it's just a way to draw awareness to things and make sure that we're talking about them. It makes me think of, expanding interest in these different topics and having these kind of holidays or events where, you know, we're taking a step aside to focus on these things. I think that that's really valuable in people discovering their interests and discovering their passion for science or the arts or whatever kind of national day it is. It's just a great way to promote all of the different opportunities that are out there.
Yep, that's what it sounds like to me. What a pleasure to have you join us tonight, Carolyn Robinson, Marketing and Public Relations Specialist at the Science Museum of Minnesota. And I hope I get to meet you, because I am definitely coming back to the Science Museum. I have people that come visit every year, sometimes, not every year. But when they do, first thing I want to do is bring them, or I say to them, hey, you guys want to go to the Science Museum? So, well done. Keep up doing the great work. Yeah, really, keep it up. And I hope I get to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's be in touch for sure.
Take care, Carolyn.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. There you go. All right. And as we wrap this up, I just want to say that I know STEM sounds so hard for so many parents. The parents, when we don't know what STEM is or STEAM is, and again, STEAM is spelled STEAM, and the A is for the arts. So that's what they put that in for STEAM. And then there's STEM. So it's got to be really frustrating sometimes for the parents not to understand it all. But there are so many books and so many people that can really help add information that really may clear up for you what it really means. I'm counting on my granddaughter. She's so smart, and I think she's going to do a great job teaching grandma all about it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. It is now 8:53 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with us. I wonder, let's take a few minutes. Do we have like 4 minutes, Jonathan? Or do we have
about five minutes.
And I want to know, you know, hear from parents or even their children, their teenagers, about STEM and how they feel about it, STEM and STEAM. And is it difficult for them, or do they just automatically jump right in? It's all about the teachers. It's all about the information, where you get the information from, and that sort of thing. But I'm so grateful that we have it now, because there are young people that are really going after it, saying, I'm going to do that. Do you think you could have ever been in STEM or STEAM?
What are you talking about, ever been in STEM? you know what I do. You know what my degree is in.
The weather.
Yes.
Yep.
That is STEM.
Okay, I should have thought of that.
Science, mathematics, technology. If you want to talk about the technological advances in modeling, weather modeling, and radar, and all of that, yeah, I am STEM.
Why did you walk away from STEM?
I'll say this. Sorry, I had to reposition the microphone here for a second. I'll say this. I am by trade a meteorologist, but I would not consider myself the most in-depth meteorologist out there. I know people that, whether they work in the broadcast side of it or whether they work at the National Weather Service or whether they work in modeling technology and that sort of thing, I know people that are so invested in the science of weather and the science of atmospheric science that they put me to shame. I still have the love of it. I still have it at my core, but not as much as those folks. I know people from school that work at the National Weather Service branch offices. I know someone that works at the Storm Prediction Center, the place where all the tornado and the severe thunderstorm watches come out of. That there's a person that I know that I graduated with, well, didn't graduate with, but had a bunch of classes with, that works down there in Norman, Oklahoma. I know someone that I graduated with that worked at the National Hurricane Center. You know, these are people that they invest in the science. And I don't know if I had that level of investment.
Do you think AI is now engaged in the weather and really making a difference or no?
I don't know if it's engaged in the weather itself and in the actual conditions, but I think in a way AI has been invested in weather forecasting for decades now, because you take modeling and it's all it is taking data that you have already in store and maybe some data that you have back 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, and it's modeling it and predicting what's going to happen down the road. That's using artificial intelligence, because you're not taking one storm and plotting it by hand. You're not plotting it manually. You're leaving it up to computer technology to advance it and say, oh, this is going to happen in 12 hours, in 24 hours, in 36. So in a way, I think artificial intelligence has been in the weather business for a long while.
Well, I have to tell you, man, this year's storms from January to now has been a trip. It has been a trip. And it's
not
been
just
a trip
this
for
year.
Years.
It's not
oh,
just,
that's
yeah.
what I was going to say.
Yeah,
it's
not
been
just
over
this
years.
Year.
Do you remember Vivian on the Weather Channel? She was one of the first, man.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Vivian Brown, I believe.
I don't remember her last name.
I believe
she was
it's
a
Vivian
black
Brown.
Woman who,
yes.
Man, I learned so much from her. That's how I got excited about weather, was listening to her.
Yeah.
You know, and now you've got this going on channels all over the world talking about the weather and getting updates as quickly as we can. So.
And you also have bobos like me.
I'm so glad you said it.
I know you were thinking it, so just stop
not.
Playing.
I was
just
not.
Stop playing like you
not.
Weren't thinking
oh,
it.
Oh, my gosh. He's so sensitive, everyone. He's sensitive. All right, we're going to take a break and come back at the 9 o'clock hour. It's called Center Stage. You don't want to miss it. It's all things arts and entertainment. We have some great guests lined up for you. You've heard Jonathan Lowe, hear him talking. And, of course, he's also the producer of the 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock hours. And then at 9 o'clock from 9 to 10, it is Chris Tubbs' turn as one of my producers as well. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Jonathan, for all you've done. I can't wait for this last hour. So stay tuned.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Your truth. true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now 8:53 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with us. I wonder, let's take a few minutes. Do we have like 4 minutes, Jonathan? Or do we have about two?
About five minutes.
And I want to know, you know, hear from parents or even their children, their teenagers, about STEM and how they feel about it, STEM and STEAM. And is it difficult for them, or do they just automatically jump right in? It's all about the teachers. It's all about the information, where you get the information from, and that sort of thing. But I'm so grateful that we have it now. Because there are young people that are really going after it, saying, I'm going to do that. Do you think you could have ever been in STEM or STEAM?
What are you talking about, ever been in STEM? You know what I do. You know what my degree is in.
The weather.
Yes.
Yep.
That is STEM.
Okay, I should have thought of that.
Science, mathematics.
Yeah.
Technology, if you want to talk about the technological advances in modeling, weather modeling and radar and all of that. Yeah, I am STEM.
Why did you walk away from STEM?
I'll say this. Sorry, I had to reposition the microphone here for a second. I'll say this. I am by trade a meteorologist, but I would not consider myself the most in-depth meteorologist out there. I know people that, whether they work in the broadcast side of it or whether they work at the National Weather Service or whether they work in modeling technology and that sort of thing, I know people that are so invested in the science of weather and the science of atmospheric science that they put me to shame. I still have the love of it. I still have it at my core, but not as much as those folks. I know people from school that work at the National Weather Service branch offices. I know someone that works at the Storm Prediction Center, the place where all the tornado and the severe thunderstorm watches come out of. That there's a person that I know that I graduated with, well, didn't graduate with, but had a bunch of classes with that works down there in Norman, Oklahoma. I know someone that I graduated with that worked at the National Hurricane Center. You know, these are people that they invest in the science. And I don't know if I had that level of investment.
Do you think AI is now engaged in the weather and really making a difference or no?
I don't know if it's engaged in the weather itself and in the actual conditions, but I think in a way. AI has been invested in weather forecasting for decades now because you take modeling and it's all it is taking data that you have already in store and maybe some data that you have back 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, and it's modeling it and predicting what's going to happen down the road. That's using artificial intelligence because you're not taking one storm and plotting it by hand. You're not plotting it manually. You're leaving it up to computer technology to advance it and say, oh, this is going to happen in 12 hours, in 24 hours, in 36. So in a way, I think artificial intelligence has been in the weather business for a long while.
Well, I have to tell you, man, this year's storms from January to now has been a trip. It has been a trip. And it's
not
been
just
a trip
this year.
For years.
It's not
oh,
just,
I, that's
yeah.
what I was going to say.
Yeah,
it's been over years.
Year.
Do you remember Vivian on the Weather Channel? She was
yes.
one of the first, man.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Vivian Brown, I believe.
I don't remember her last name.
I believe it's Vivian
black
Brown.
Woman who,
yes.
Man, I learned so much from her. That's how I got excited about weather, was listening to her.
Yeah.
You know, and now you've got this going on channels all over the world talking about the weather and getting updates as quickly as we can. So.
And you also have bobos like me.
I'm so glad you said it.
I know you were thinking it, so just stop playing.
I was not.
Stop playing like you weren't thinking it.
Oh, my gosh. He's so sensitive, everyone. He's sensitive. All right, we're going to take a break and come back at the 9 o'clock hour. It's called Center Stage. You don't want to miss it. It's all things arts and entertainment. We have some great guests lined up for you. You've heard Jonathan Lowe, hear him talking. And, of course, he's also the producer of the 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock hours. And then at 9 o'clock from 9 to 10, it is Chris Tubbs' turn as one of my producers as well. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Jonathan, for all you've done. I can't wait for this last hour. So stay tuned.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.